Welcome to Cookbook Club. We are home cooks from Portland, Oregon.
I'm Sarah Gray.
And I'm Renee Wilkinson. And joining us from our Cookbook Club is Melissa Chan. Welcome, Melissa.
Hello.
Every other episode of Cookbook Club will be focused not on a cookbook, but on a cooking topic. This week, we're talking about meatballs. Yes, meatballs. Who knew we could have so many things to say about them?
Ugh, we do. I have to admit, I was once anti-meatball. They seemed like an unnecessary step. All that shaping, rolling, frying, you know, sticking your hands in raw meat. But I've since become a convert because so many people in Cookbook Club convinced me they were worth it. We're going to talk about what recipes we love the most and tips we've picked up from cookbook authors that make the process easier.
Here's what I want to know. What is your platonic ideal of a meatball? Like, I think everybody kind of grows up eating some version of a meatball.
What should a meatball be?
Yeah, like, did you grow up eating meatballs? And what kind of meatballs did you grow up eating?
My dad, one of the few recipes he knew how to make was something that he called Swedish meatballs. Mm-hmm. I have a feeling these are not authentic Swedish meatballs. I remember that they were like, sorry, Dad, tight, dry, with huge chunks of bread in it. Mm-hmm. And they were not wonderful. But what a meatball should be is soft, tender, not tight, because to me that means you've overworked it. You shouldn't be getting big clumps of bread in your mouth.
Like nicely flavored.
Yeah. And the flavoring profile doesn't matter to me as much what you put in it, but it's more like the texture should be right.
Yeah.
What do you think, Sarah?
I agree. I am sure that someone made me homemade meatballs when I was growing up, but I don't have a memory of it. My parents were like early Costco shoppers, so mm-hmm. I had a lot of like prepared food kind of stuff sometimes. And so, more of like a tight, you know, not that exciting meatball. It's just like a protein source and you just gulp it down and move on with your life.
I have some great childhood memories about meatballs. I'm half Italian, so that means I had an Italian grandma and we lived in the same town and she cooked great red sauce and made meatballs. And I remember sitting around the kitchen table with her making meatballs and having my hands in the meat and helping her like mix them. We would eat the raw like meatball mixture to like taste it for seasoning. And
wow,
like that was actually like so delicious. And now I realize as an adult, I'm like, oh, that's like sketch. And like now that I'm grown up, I like know too much to do that.
Right.
But I did that growing up. And so she would make meatballs with red sauce, but then she would also use the same mixture and just make little kind of almost like finger-shaped little patties that she would fry up and get really brown on both sides. And we would just kind of eat those with our hands. And those were just a really delicious snack. And there was a period of time when I was vegetarian where she started making little vegetarian ones for me and my sister because we were both vegetarian. She made them with rice, parsley, and pecorino, and egg.
Yum.
All the same things that bound the meat together, but with rice. And
is that almost like arancini?
Yeah, I guess it was similar to arancini. She called it brujol, but I think that brujol is actually a very different Italian like pork preparation. But
oh, okay.
I mean, I'm sure that there's some context for why she called it that I don't know about.
Right. That's so cool.
It's like a very sensory activity, mixing
the meat and the
raw egg with your hands. And I actually like think that probably maybe skeeves people out, but I love it.
I'm skeeved out by it.
Yeah. I love mixing things with my hands.
I don't mind handling meat, but there's something, I think I do have some like textural issues, mm-hmm. like sensory issues, and just the squishing I don't like.
I love it.
Not into the squishing.
Yeah.
But I have since learned some meatball hacks that mean that I don't have to like squish meat and egg with my bare hands. I'll wear like gloves when I do it. So
I was just going to ask, like, does that
totally helps because part of it too is that your hands are covered with goo and then someone needs something and you like can't do it or it's just a fiasco. Gloves help, or I found a way that I can do it with my largest rubber spatula and kind of get a good enough even distribution and then use a cookie scoop, like an ice cream scoop, to scoop the meatballs and then just lightly roll it with my hands. So it's like minimal hand time.
Got it. That's one of my favorite things about making meatballs is the
getting in there with your hands.
Nice. Yeah. So are you going to do that with your kid? Does he help you make meatballs?
You know, he should. I probably should let him. I feel like I've talked to you guys about this before. My kid is 4 years old. I know you guys both also have four-year-olds or almost four-year-olds.
Yes.
And he's very interested in helping me. But I also am trying to be very protective of my time in the kitchen because that's my alone time. And it's my time to think or like listen to a podcast or whatever. So there are times when I don't let him help me because I just want to be by myself.
Yeah, I relate.
Yep.
I relate. So do you think that you as a cook have reached that platonic ideal of a meatball that you remember from your growing up?
I've always kind of wung meatballs based on the ingredients that my grandma used. Every time I'd make my kind of like classic Italian meatball, I would always use a mixture of ground beef and ground pork, eggs, pecorino, chopped parsley, maybe a little bit of garlic, salt, and honestly, not much else. Like, that's basically what my grandma used. And I never really wrote down a ratio or anything. I would just kind of go by feel and what seemed right. And they're always pretty good. Okay, but I did find the platonic ideal of this meatball, and it's Rao's meatballs. It's in the Genius Recipes cookbook. It's also on food52.com. I think you can also find it on New York Times Cooking, but it's from Rao's, which is a restaurant in New York City. They also make a marinara sauce that you can buy in the grocery store.
I didn't realize that was connected to an actual restaurant.
Yeah, so there's a restaurant in New York City called Rao's.
Okay, well, for people who don't know, Rao's marinara sauce is great.
The best jarred marinara.
You can buy it at Target. You can buy it at Whole Foods. You can find it when you search for it. And it's pricey, but it's worth it.
Yes, you've probably seen it in grocery stores before and not bought it because it can be, depending on what grocery store you're at, it can be up to like $9 a jar, which is a lot. For years, I didn't buy it, mainly because I don't buy jarred marinara sauce because I grew up with my grandma's marinara sauce and it's so good. And so I like to make my own, but it's time consuming. So I decided to suck it up and just buy it one day. And
it's so good.
Life is game changing.
It's totally.
And this episode was not sponsored by Rao's marinara sauce.
Sponsored by Rao's. In our efforts to have delicious food, but also like not break the bank, I feel like as a cookbook club have found the places you can get Rao's in town for a decent price.
Whole Foods is having a sale on Rao's and everybody runs out and gets it.
Yep. Yeah. Whole Foods and Target are probably the best places to get Rao's. They also make like frozen meals.
I think they make a frozen lasagna and stuff too.
Yeah.
An Italian restaurant based in New York with tons of history. I would trust their meatball recipe.
But the meatball you're talking about is a homemade meatball. You're just following the recipe.
Yeah. Let's talk about this recipe because it has all of the same ingredients that I put in my meatballs based on my memory of my grandma.
Did you say breadcrumbs in that list too?
Breadcrumbs. Did I forget breadcrumbs?
I don't
know. That's a very key ingredient.
But I think some people are real like anti breadcrumb or whatever, and other people are like, it's kind of a necessary part.
Ooh, yeah, let's talk about that. Let's put a pin in that and get back to breadcrumbs. But okay, yes, breadcrumbs are a key ingredient. Okay, so it's all the same ingredients, but in vastly different proportions.
Interesting.
It calls for beef, pork, and veal, but I just use beef and pork. The thing that is really different about this recipe, it calls for 2 cups of breadcrumbs.
Wow.
And then 2 cups of water.
Which is like way more breadcrumbs than you'd think. And I've never added water to a meatball recipe
exactly.
ever.
So it seems like a ton of breadcrumbs.
So are they like steaming from the inside with all that water in them?
And then you add the water and basically all of that moisture in the meatball, it creates the most tender,
ooh,
like luscious, amazing meatball that tastes from my like Northeast Italian American roots, like exactly as it should. You know, I grew up 1.5 hours outside of New York City. So like, we're probably from the same part of Italy. And, like,
right.
You know, that's my meatball. So I highly recommend that
recipe. And then you fry them?
Yes, I fried them. I don't typically fry meatballs only because of laziness.
It's lazy, but it's also smart not to have to like stand there and waste the time and
roll
like
them around
and then have them be uneven.
I think it's far superior if you fry them. It changes the texture. It's kind of a two-part cooking. You get nice and brown and crunchy on the outside from the frying, and then you just simmer the rest in sauce. So it's like they're still kind of not cooked in the middle, but then you infuse the sauce with all of that flavor from the meatballs. Mm-hmm. So I do think that's the superior way to cook meatballs.
I'm like on team, put them in the oven,
mm-hmm,
but a lot of juice just leaks out of it and you end up washing it down the sink.
I'm still going to stay on team oven because that's what made me like be okay making meatballs, really, because it was like one too many steps. It was like, okay, first you want me to use my hands and take the time to form it. And then you want me to like sit here and babysit it forever. So taking that one step out has made it so that I actually make meatballs. But prior to that, like for years, I just never made them.
It's the difference between a project and something you can whip together on a weeknight.
So the Rao's meatball is the top for you. I got to make these meatballs.
100%.
Talk about other meatballs that you have enjoyed, though, other recipes.
I really like Asian, like meatballs with Asian flavors, like pork meatballs with ginger. I think that kofta, like when you think about like Middle Eastern food, those, like, little beef meatballs with bulgur are so yummy. I like a lamb meatball. one recipe that I do really like, a Smitten Kitchen recipe for braised ginger meatballs in coconut broth.
Mm, that sounds good.
But yeah, like a yellow curry coconut milk broth. And it was delicious.
That sounds really good.
My kid loved it.
In Smitten Kitchen every day, they have the meatballs marsala with wide egg noodles, which mm-hmm. has chives on top. And it's like a really basic chicken meatball. And you make this like gravy. I made it this week and everybody just gobbled it up. It was so, so good.
Speaking of Deb Perlman from Smitten Kitchen, she has a sesame spiced turkey meatballs. That's part of a recipe that also includes smashed chickpea salad. We don't make the salad part, but that's my partner's go-to meatball. Calls for ground turkey, breadcrumbs, water, garlic, cumin, coriander, Aleppo pepper, which we usually leave out because of the kids, and toasted sesame seeds.
So this is almost like a Middle Eastern type.
Yeah, it's really good. I gotta say, anytime a recipe calls for turkey, we usually just sub something else because I don't really like ground turkey for a meatball. So even in the Smitten Kitchen recipe, we usually just sub pork or whatever other meat we have on hand. We've used beef before too.
I think that's really smart. I know that one of the meatball recipes that sort of like introduced me to meatballs sort of at the beginning of my cooking journey was the turkey ricotta meatballs from Small Victories, which of course do not have breadcrumbs in them, but it's too lean of a meatball for me. Like
it's too lean.
They don't have, that turkey just does not hold it together. And so I like that turkey ricotta meatball prepared exactly as stated, but do half beef, half pork. So you can just put a pound of each and it's much, much better, I think.
The small victory, I think, in that recipe was that she was able to make a meatball that didn't have bread in it because her wife was diabetic.
Mm-hmm.
And so she used ricotta to kind of create that binding and to add the like tenderness.
And take the pin out. What do you think?
Yeah.
Does it need the breadcrumbs?
I think that meatballs 100% need something to tenderize them, right? Like, that's the difference between a meatball and or a meatloaf and, like, a burger or a sausage. Is
very
that
true.
You need something that's going to block the meat from creating all that protein and, like, becoming tough. And so typically that's, like, you know, you add eggs, you add some kind of dairy, perhaps, whether it's ricotta or buttermilk or cream. You add breadcrumbs. Some recipes call for like soaking breadcrumbs in milk or soaking breadcrumbs in water to like make what's called a panade, which adds a lot of moisture. I love a meatball that's just really super tender. So for me, that's super necessary. I've been very curious about what other things you can add to meatballs to kind of add that tenderness. Like I've been really curious about using rice in meatballs.
Mm-hmm.
Because I feel like it could do the same kind of thing. And it, again, going back to like kofta uses bulgur.
Right.
And it's basically just stuff that's like blocking the meat from just glomming altogether.
Right.
It's like physically creating a barrier inside the meatball to keep it tender.
I feel like a lot of vegetarian faux meatballs call for rice.
Yeah.
In part for the bulk.
Yeah.
You know, it's bigger than breadcrumbs and so it can take up more space. It seems like it is versatile for soaking up flavors.
Totally. I've even been very curious about Rice Krispies and like almost treating a Rice Krispie like a breadcrumb. Well, I don't know. We had a conversation with Cookbook Club about meatballs and there's a couple people that avoid gluten in our Cookbook Club.
Yeah.
And I was just wondering what could a substitute be that's maybe not like gluten-free breadcrumbs?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Like, is there a different substitute?
Sarah, what are some of the meatball recipes that you make a lot?
I have a bunch that I like that are sort of pulled from different food cultures. I really like this recipe for banh mi meatballs, which is from a cookbook called Salad for Dinner by Jeannie Kelly. It's a recipe for a hearty salad that's sort of based on like the flavor profile of a banh mi sandwich. And it's a pork meatball and it has like sesame oil and green onions. And it's really, really delicious. I've made the salad a couple of times, but usually I would just make the meatballs.
Mm-hmm.
I really love the lamb meatball from Six Seasons by Joshua McFadden. It's a really nice, like really savory lamb meatball. And it comes from a recipe that's like for a couscous and English pea thing.
Also,
they're really, really good.
What kind of seasoning does he have in that?
It's got cumin in it. It has mint as well. Yeah. So I feel like lamb and mint work so well together.
Yeah.
It's really, really tasty. I've also really enjoyed the albóndigas, which is just the Spanish word for meatball, from the Ama cookbook, which is like a Tex-Mex cookbook. And it's sort of a, you know, sort of a Tex-Mex flavor profile. So it also has cumin, but it's got sort of like more of like that Mexican spice flavoring in it. And I thought those were really good. The other recipe that I really like is from Vietnamese Cooking Any Day by Andrea Nguyen, the curry-scented grilled beef which is not a meatball recipe, but you can make it into meatballs mm-hmm. because it's like it calls for you to make this meat mixture and sort of form it into like these pucks. But I have made it just like meatballs instead. And then it cooks faster. The only tip on that one I have, if you're going to make it into meatballs, is to either cut the cashews or peanuts, which it calls for, much thinner, like dice them much thinner. Or you can leave them out because texturally, if you get the chunks of nut in there too big, mm-hmm. then you can bite into the meatball and think that you're biting into like gristle or something because the nut just sort of like confuses your brain. Mm-hmm. But I've made it and left out the nuts before, and I think it's really good.
One other, I know that we just kind of spent a long time talking about how turkey meatballs are not good. Ottolenghi recipe from Jerusalem called Turkey and Zucchini Burgers. Mm. And maybe that's not the exact name of it, but it's something like that. But it uses shredded zucchini and cumin, and I think there's sumac in it. And but there's like a lot of shredded zucchini. It's probably like maybe like half meat, half zucchini. And the zucchini adds a lot of moisture. He has you make them into little burgers, but they're essentially just little. They're tiny. They're patties.
Right.
And then you serve them with like a yogurt dipping sauce. Mm. And that's a really, really good.
Sounds really good.
Good recipe.
What about you, Renee? Do you have any other favorite recipes for meatballs?
My favorite meatball recipe currently is one by Melissa Clark that came out sometime in the last few months called Meatballs with Any Meat. So mm-hmm. Melissa Clark writes for The New York Times, and we can link to that article in the show notes. But I love this because it's more of a loose framework on how to make a meatball, and then you can customize it to whatever you have on hand. So the recipe is 1 pound of ground meat. So that could be whatever meat is your preference. Like some people might want beef or pork or chicken or turkey or whatever. Half a cup of panko breadcrumbs and so on. Like all of the regular suspects that you would see in a meatball recipe. Egg, salt, and then seasoning. And she gives some suggestions on what kind of seasoning, which I think is really helpful. One of her suggestions was garam masala, which I think would be really awesome to try to make kind of like an Indian-inspired meatball. And then your allium family thing of like onions, scallions, shallots, whatever, and then some fresh herbs. And so it's just a super easy recipe that is very pantry friendly. So if you haven't gone to the grocery store in a while, but you have some ground meat in the freezer, you can pull it out and just throw it together with whatever you have on hand. She has you fry it in oil, but since I prefer to do it in the oven, I just do it in the oven instead.
I love a recipe framework like that. That makes me so happy. I think the Melissa Clark is really great at that. And Samin Nosrat does that. There's a lot of that in salt, fat, acid, heat.
That's like my recipe love language. Yeah, I think right now I'm a season of life.
Give me a template.
Pick one thing from each of these columns. Yeah, I just think that's such a great way to cook. And it allows you to be more creative as a cook too.
Yeah. Stay with us. We'll be back in just a minute.
We're getting ready for the biggest cooking holiday of the year and cooking this month from Sam Sifton's book, Thanksgiving, How to Cook It Well. Cook along with us and tag us on Instagram, adding the hashtag Cookbook Club Show so we can see what you're cooking too. And tune in November 3rd to hear what we love from this book. Dropcloth Samplers is a line of hand-drawn embroidery samplers, printed and ready for you to jump in and start stitching right away. Each pattern is hand-drawn by Rebecca Ringquist in her Portland, Oregon studio and printed for you to embroider with your own color and thread choices, like coloring book pages, but for embroidery. You can find Dropcloth Samplers on Etsy or on Instagram at Dropcloth.
We should talk about how you eat meatballs, because I didn't initially, you know, in my before I had come around to making meatballs, I thought that was only something that you would like make with spaghetti when you're having pasta. But I have found the opposite to be true, that you could kind of make it fit almost any meal that you're having.
Mm-hmm.
We eat it often with rice bowls on rice bowl night. Then we can just kind of like mix up the flavoring of the meatball to fit whatever other veggies we're going to have on the table. We do occasionally eat it with pasta. We don't eat it as like a sandwich so much, but it's like so indulgent when you can have like a meatball sandwich.
Oh,
like bring me back to my high school days of eating like totally gross Subway meatball sandwiches. Yes, they're like a grown up version. How do you guys eat meatballs with your families?
A lot of nights of the week I make sort of like what we would call like a square meal, which is like a veggie, a starch, and a protein. I will just put meatballs on the plate.
Sometimes it's great with a sauce, and sometimes the sauce is part of the recipe, and other times it's just like some meat on your plate, and maybe there's something that you can dip it in.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I think they're so flexible. I think meatballs can be really great in soup. Oh, yeah. If you think of like Italian wedding soup.
Yeah, I feel like that's a really good like flavor bomb probably too. If you have a really good meatball and then you're putting it in soup, it just kind of like seeps out into everything else in there. Yeah, we use it a lot for like build your own meals, like we talked about. And then also sheet pans, which is another like easy way, you know, like if you're going to do a sheet pan dinner that has sausages, you could easily just sub in meatballs instead. And then like the small victories recipe where that turkey ricotta meatballs, it makes like a double batch and you put it in the freezer.
Yeah.
So now whenever I make meatballs, I think of that, like, should I just take out twice as much ground meat as I need and then double the recipe and save some for later
and just bank them in the freezer. I've got spaghetti and meatballs on my meal plan this week and I was like, done, I already made them, I've got some in my freezer just waiting.
J. Kenji Lopez Alt has a book called The Food Lab. He talks about meatloaf and then he talks about meatballs right after, and it's basically like meatballs are essentially just tiny round meatloaves. There's nothing different between them. They both are kind of the big difference between that and like a burger or a sausage is
the filler
the adding a bunch of stuff to it to make it more tender.
That totally makes sense to me. And I feel like it reminds me of, there's a Smitten Kitchen recipe that's like, it's like a big meatball and a small meatloaf, depending on what you want to call it. And I think she serves it on a bed of like pasta and red sauce or something. And yeah, I have a few times before taken a meatloaf recipe and just formed it into meatballs because it cooks a lot faster.
That's so interesting.
Yeah.
That's kind of like a light bulb moment for me because we used to make meatloaf a lot. We had a couple recipes that we really in particular liked. And then after my son was born and diagnosed with PKU, he can't eat protein the way that we can eat protein. And so we really stopped making meatloaf because it's too hard. I don't think it's worth it to make a vegetarian meatloaf or to make like a low pro version of meatloaf. Just seems like, that's like you're trying to make a low pro version of a roast chicken or something. Like, just pick something else.
Yeah.
And so that really does coincide with when we started to make meatballs more. So now that makes sense to me that really you're just making the same exact mix. It's just you're forming it and shaping it differently.
Totally. Yeah.
And I love that it takes less time.
Yeah. Way less time. Well, there's a recipe in Simply Julia. Calls it Dad's Tex-Mex Meatballs, which is a meatball that I do not love. But she... like that recipe appeared in Small Victories as a variation on something as Dad's Tex-Mex Meatloaf. But then it came around again in Simply Julia as a meatball. And she says right in the recipe notes, like, my dad used to make this meatloaf. Let's make it into meatballs because it'll cook quicker and it'll be a lot easier.
I have made that recipe as the meatloaf form, and it was not a huge hit with our family. It turned out like way too salty because of the
chips.
I think you used tortilla chips in it, and but there were just some other things about it that didn't really.
I also
work
don't
super
love
well.
That recipe. I like the flavor profile of it because it tastes like tortilla chips, but I feel like the tortilla chips totally overpower the meat. Rebecca in our cookbook club, when she made it, she said, "And this tastes like." It's like all trans fat, basically, because it's like a tortilla chip based meatball. And so it doesn't really taste that much like a meatball.
Yeah.
Like the meat kind of gets lost.
The concept is really interesting.
Yeah.
Like I want to love that. Like just the idea of, I mean, you know, I was talking about using rice or Rice Krispies, like the idea of using, and I think she even talks about using the crumbs left over at the bottom of the chip bag, which is genius.
Yeah.
But like I have not made it because I've heard enough people say, I didn't love it.
That's why I made it, because we had like the crumbs at the end of the tortilla chip bag. But I feel like there are recipes that call for like potato chips, you know, in place of like breadcrumbs and stuff like that. I mean, totally different. I think a better texture for cooking because they're so like nothing, you know, they're like little nuggets of air with salt on them. I can see how when you crush that up and put it in things, it's going to taste delicious. Another question about turkey. I guess I'm just going to come out as anti-ground turkey in general.
Yeah.
I like turkey, and I love wild turkey, but I don't like ground turkey.
I'm with you.
Why in the world would you ever want to cook with ground turkey aside from thinking that it is a healthier alternative?
I don't know. Honestly, that's one of the things that I don't love about Julia Tertian's books in general, is that I feel like every time she calls for ground meat, it's almost always ground turkey. And I just think that that's the worst option.
I think it might be an environmental impact thing.
It
I think she's trying not to call for beef too much.
Okay.
Was the way I sort of read
why
it.
Not, and like not pork, because like if you don't call for beef or pork, then like more people from different cultural backgrounds would feel fine eating that. Because if you're going to call for beef, that's going to, some people are not going to eat that. And if it calls for pork, like some other cultures are not going to eat that. But everybody possible, was going to eat turkey.
It's possible that Julia Tershin just really likes ground turkey.
That's true.
So, yeah.
Well, different Julia, if you're listening, please let us know. Why are you on team ground turkey?
Is it all of the above?
Inquiring minds in Portland would like to know.
Because I was reading through the food lab before coming here, he has a whole section on ground meat and the difference between store-bought ground meat versus having your butcher grind it for you versus grinding it yourself in a meat grinder versus like hand chopping it.
Hand chopping it?
Yeah, like taking a big piece of meat and just like chopping the crap out of it until you essentially
until it's essentially ground.
My question is, I mean, I always buy just pre-ground meat because that's the easiest thing to do. I am like meat grinder curious. I do have a KitchenAid mixer and you can get an attachment for
like
that.
A food mill meat grinder, yeah.
So he kind of did a bunch of different like experiments and, you know, he was like, even just having your butcher like grind the meat for you on the spot is far superior. And that had never occurred to me before. A, that you could do that.
Right.
Or that you could have someone do that at the grocery store. Like, I always forget that you can, that the people that work at the butcher counter, like you can buy a whole chicken and have them chop it up for you.
Or have them spatchcock
it or whatever. They, like, they've got all the stuff there.
One time I asked somebody to put a fillet of salmon into 1-inch cubes. They almost threw me out of the store.
Oh my gosh.
Really?
Yeah.
Why?
They were like 1-inch cubes. It's also really hard to cut it off the skin. It was like
okay.
a whole thing.
Wow.
Yeah.
That kind of goes to like the culture of butchery in the U.S. that like we have like people who work at meat counters are not necessarily butchers. They work at a meat counter.
Right.
And then there's some like really high-end gourmet meat counters where they're a little bit of a butcher.
Yeah.
But it's really hard to find like authentic actual butchers.
Yeah.
And if you want to know more about that, you can read the book Killing It by Camus Davis, which I read and was eye-opening into the world of butchery and the way that we do things in the U.S. compared with other parts of the world. And
interesting.
Also all about like women and butchery, which I'm totally interested in.
Yeah, I am also interested.
So I am also meat grinder curious for that because I would like to make my own sausage and stuff like that. And I know that from our meat CSA, I think the quality of ground meat that we're getting is good because it's still just all the scraps. It's getting processed in the same place where the chops and all the steaks and all the cuts are getting processed. Is it freshness? And that's why like it's better when the butcher or the person who works at the meat counter is grinding it.
I'm picturing like the ground meat that you buy like in the styrofoam tray that's already shrink wrapped
I mean,
and like it clearly came out of like an industrial machine because it's like a brick versus the stuff that they have processed in the store that's like in the meat, you know, behind the meat counter.
But yeah, that's not already packaged and wrapped and you tell them
like
how much you want and they scoop it out.
They probably processed it on site.
Yes, there's like a huge probably quality spectrum of ground beef. Like, yeah, like we all have meat CSAs that where we can get like amazing grass-fed pastured.
We do asterisks because we live in a totally wonderful part of the world
exactly.
where we can like get that.
And then yeah, there's like your kind of Safeway like
supermarket.
Yeah, super like supermarket, very affordable ground beef. He's saying if buying pre-ground beef, look for stuff ground in store rather than packed in vacuum sealed containers off-site, which have inferior texture and inconsistent flavor.
Yeah, I can see the texture thing for sure.
It's like a paste. It's so finely ground.
That sounds so gross.
Yeah. He's saying that having it ground fresh from the butcher is way superior with the added benefit that you can request specific cuts to be ground.
So you can affect the fat content. And
exactly.
Makeup.
He said the dedicated meat grinder or stand mixer attachment is the best all-around method, particularly excellent for loose pan-seared patties or for larger grilled burgers that will stay tender and juicy as you cook them. Hand chopped, he said, when I've got the time, this is my new go-to method, particularly for thicker burgers where the steak-like quality of the chunky beef really makes for an interesting finished texture.
Oh.
I have these like giant hunks of pork shoulder in my freezer right now. And in a pandemic, like when am I going to need to cook 4 pounds of pork shoulder? Like, you know, you can always like make it and freeze it. But I was like, oh, I guess I could if there's like there's a way for me to turn that into ground pork.
I love it. I love that we can sit around and talk about like the nuance of ground beef together because we found our people in life, you know?
I know.
Oh my gosh, I'm so hungry now. I feel totally motivated to go home and make a double batch of meatballs and throw some in the deep freeze.
We hope you feel inspired to try some new recipes too. Check out our show notes to find links to some of the recipes we discussed and be sure to let us know your favorite meatball recipes.
Thank you so much, Melissa, for joining us. I feel like you're kind of like the meatball expert.
Thank you for having me. I loved talking about meatballs.
Good. I loved it. We'll be back next time with more thoughts on home cooking. This month, we're cooking from Sam Sifton's cookbook, Thanksgiving, How to Cook It Well. So be sure to keep cooking along with us. And please reach out if you have a show idea. We'd love to hear from you.
And cook along with us between now and then. Just tag us on Instagram at Cookbook Club Show or send us a voice memo or a comment at cookbookclubshow@gmail.com. You can find us online at cookbookclub.show.
And remember to subscribe to our podcast so you don't miss the next one. And leaving us a review will help other home cooks find us too.
Goodbye.
Bye.